After the terror of September 11th, America wasn't sure how to react. Gradually, we heard about a return to traditional values, nesting, comfort food. But how true was that story? Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and feminist Susan Faludi isn't buying it. She writes about the effect of 9/11 on society, especially women, in the book The Terror Dream. And she says the American reaction to 9/11 wasn't what you'd expect.
We were saying it changed everything, and yet we were frantically going in the other direction. What set me out to working on the book was just seeing in the days and weeks and months and then years afterward this strange response. I mean, we fell into this odd kind of fever dream where our political leaders were reenacting some old drama in the Wild West drama in the old frontier, and our media and pundits were talking about how this was going to be the return of a John Wayne manhood and the return of a kind of Doris Day femininity, with women supposedly going back to the home in reaction to the attacks. And none of this seemed to be a response to the actual threat we faced. I mean, we've been attacked by hijackers who aimed their planes at the symbols of commercial and military power in this country. I mean, they weren't attacking the home and hearth, so why were we reacting that way?
Let's talk about some of the things then, and whether they are real or not. I mean, some of them I don't suppose you can track. There's no way you're going to know whether mac and cheese really became the American foodstuff again after this. Although it makes sense, you know, you want comfort food when you're frightened.
Right. The media had a series of stories about how we were going to be stocking up on roasting pans and kind of Susie Homemaker, you know, sewing machines. And the roasting pan prediction may have come true simply because it was some weeks before Thanksgiving. But that really had nothing to do with how women were responding to an attack in New York. To understand it, you have to understand where this mythology that we live by comes from. And the mythology is of a sort of masculine nation that protects its women. And you see that in the, you know, everything from the Daniel Boone story to Last of the Mohicans down to the modern era of John Wayne movies to the very post 9/11 informed film War of the Worlds, the Steven Spielberg film, in which, you know, you have the dad played by Tom Cruise rescuing his daughter, not only from Martian attack, but from some sexual predator in a kind of farm homestead. We have almost, you know, a reflexive reaction, which you saw front and center after 9/11. And my question was, well, where does that come from in our history?
It's a story we like to tell. It's a story that seems to provide some comfort.
And comfort is the key word. And the question is, well, what's underneath it? And as much as we heard over and over in the media after 9/11 that these sort of attacks were something that had never happened to us before, you know, that America is not a nation that's vulnerable to assault on home soil, and certainly in the modern era, that's largely true. But if you go back and look at our earliest foundational historical experience, you see a very different tale.
In what way?
Well, for the first 2 centuries of, you know, early American colonial American life, over and over again, the experience of that period, the sort of central experience, was being attacked on quote-unquote home soil. Now, clearly, this is home soil that that the settlers took from the Indians.
Yeah.
But viewing history from the perspective of the settlers, if you view it from the Native American experience, it's a completely different drama, but that's a story for another day. The settlers experienced being attacked by people they regarded and demonized as non-Christian, non-white, quote-unquote terrorists. That was a term that was, in fact, used. And these were attacks on villages, communities. They were aimed at the home and hearth. Moreover, they were attacks in which, time and again, leaders, militias, husbands were not able to protect their families. People were taken captive. Women were taken captive, and women, time and again, defended themselves or denounced the male leadership for not, you know, for failing to protect their communities. This was not a story that shone a very, you know, rosy light on the notion of male protection. So starting in the 18th century and culminating in the Victorian era, what you saw was a sort of systemic cultural rewrite where journalists, novelists, artists, sculptors took these accounts and revised them till male shame had been turned into an exaggerated ironclad male valor, and female strength was either, you know, derided or turned into exaggerated helplessness.
Okay, all of this begins to make sense, but didn't we move past that? Isn't that a story that belongs to the Victorian age and earlier? Haven't we, in the last century, granted women more and more respectability, responsibility, strength in American society? Why would 9/11 cause us to go to a Victorian model?
Well, as much as we like to pat ourselves on the back and think that's all ancient history, the history of feminism in America is, you know, 5 minutes of hooray for women's independence followed by, you know, years on end of hysterical counter-reaction to that. I mean, going back to the Victorian era, that last half of the 19th century was a period where women were working very hard to expand educational and economic opportunities for themselves and push for suffrage. And what you saw was an enormous counterattack to that, and in sort of burrowing into that mythology. And in the 20th century, again, you saw that after suffrage was won in 1920 and, of course, in the 1950s. And then in our earliest, most recent period, you know, we had the 70s as a moment when hooray for the second wave of feminism, followed by, you know, the immediate clampdown by the end of the 70s, and certainly with the dawn of the Reagan era, you know, a full-blown attack. And the attack took the form of, no, women want to go back to the home. Women don't want these high-pressure jobs. Women fear that if, and rightly so, that if they get education, they'll reduce their chances of marriage. So, you know, by, yes, the introduction of feminism, but at the same time, a desperate holding on to that mythology by both men and women.
Why do you think we were so quick to adopt this idea as a nation? You can understand how some might cynically say this is an opportunity to push certain ideas on the country. Mm-hmm. But as a nation, we bought it.
Well, this goes back to, I believe, and I'm not offering this as the only reason, but I think a profound aspect was this experience of 9/11 as an almost a throwback to our original trauma. And by that, I don't mean, I'm not talking about some sort of recovered memory syndrome on a cultural level, but by going through a trauma, much like the original crisis we experienced in the early days of American experience, we reached out for that same mythology that had been our kind of protective security blanket that we spent all those years creating to sort of paper over our original vulnerability. So it was, you know, it was the myth that was lying on the ground that got reactivated that we just instinctively grabbed for.
Maybe we need to look at history again and see what the reaction of the American public was to similar events two centuries ago or three, because one of the things that's fascinating about this is to realize that while America was under attack, as it was, in the ways that you've described, the response of the founding fathers was to not limit liberties, but to demand
expand them. Exactly. I mean, here's a generation steeped in the very trauma that created this mythology down the road. But at the time, they embraced and elaborated on a social vision of democratic principles, of tolerance, of liberty. It is possible to go in another direction. I would point to our mobilization to World War II as an alternative vision, where we had a leadership that appealed to our hopes, not our fears, that concentrated on a practical, pragmatic response that engaged and required sacrifice from everyone, that brought women into the workforce, not sent them home to bake cookies, that subsidized daycare during the war so that women were able to work and have children. And that concentrated on actually achieving our aims, you know, producing Liberty ships at a what seems now like a miraculous rate, and well-built ships. You know, we contrast that with our inability even to provide armor to our soldiers in Iraq.
These are hopeful images from the past. For the feminist movement, are there hopeful images to go forward with? What does it mean for feminism today to have had this response to 9/11? Where is the movement going from here?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I think what we need the resurrection of a movement. And by that, I mean, of course, there are women out there who've been activists, who've been working so hard all these years and have not given up. But in order for the country as a whole to move forward towards real equality, towards engaging the entire population in public life and in public responsibility, we need a movement that has a broad base. We need to return to the idea of that feminism is about remaking society in a meaningful and imaginative and bold way.
Susan Faludi is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and the author of The Terror Dream,